The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk.
Now, if you remember The Hucklebuck, you'll probably love the show that's coming to the Gaiety Theatre in Dublin, starring my next guest. And if you don't remember The Hucklebuck, then now is your chance to learn all about Ireland's show band era. Carol Gleeson is one of the women behind the show. It's called Are You Dancing? And one of its stars is Carol, but alongside her is retired school principal and award-winning amateur actor Paul Mescal. And as I say, hearts are trembling all over the country, not realising it's Mescal Pear rather than Mescal Peace.
Mescal Pear, yes. that's a first, yeah. And thank you for elevating me to principal. I didn't quite make it to the echelons of principal, so I'm a retired teacher, but thanks.
All right. Now, before we talk to you about your career, which is not, this is not a debut. You've been on the boards before. I want to talk to Carol about the show itself and how it came about.
Right. Well, Are You Dancing? A show band story. It's a play with music written by myself and my best friend, Helen Spring. It's set in 1960s Donegal during Ireland's vibrant show band era. And the story follows a young man by the name of Tommy O'Neill, a shy, unassuming young man who finds himself unwittingly at the helm of an up-and-coming show band. And as his star rises, we see his struggles both professionally and personally, and all set against the cultural backdrop of 1960s Ireland.
Now, I'm not trying to be complimentary or flattering, but you don't look like you lived through the show band era yourself.
No, I didn't. So obviously the show required an awful lot of research. So myself and Helen now are too young to remember the days, but as you know, it's very recent history, so we had loads of first-hand accounts to draw from as part of our research. And we actually started at the very top with the late great Jimmy McGee, who, as you know, was prolific during that era. He was a very close family friend of my husband's, so I had access to Jimmy for hours on end when it came about in 2018, when we had decided we wanted to write the play based in this era. And he was so excited about the concept. So Jimmy would sit back for hours and regale you with tales from every perspective, the industry side, the general side, and then he'd stop every so often and belt out a verse of Make Me an Island. Even in a restaurant, he didn't care who was watching. And also after Jimmy, we spoke to Sean Riley and his lovely wife, Olive, who were also very involved in the industry, and then to all the locals. So there was loads of first-hand accounts we could draw from, because it was very important to us that we portrayed the 1960s very authentically and very effectively in our play.
But what inspired you to write the play? I mean, what was the seed that told you this deserved some exposure?
Yeah, so we felt it was a relatively untapped topic in Irish theatre in general. And we had both grown up listening to our grandparents talk about stories of old. You know, the showband stories have become part of local folklore in every town and village across Ireland. But we had decided we wanted to write a play and we wanted it to involve music. So we literally took out the Irish history books, flicked back through all the recent decades and last two centuries, and stopped upon the showband era because it was so vibrant and so diverse. And we just felt it offered us such amazing scope in terms of the social element, the cultural element, the serious element, and then also the fun element.
Now, so many ideas remain just gleams in the eye and never actually make it. So to get it produced, to actually get it out there.
Yes, so that's where I suppose most writers face their greatest challenge. But Helen and I, 2 years previous, had formed our own arts production company to focus on, I suppose, female-driven theatre. So we had that in place. So when we wrote our play, instead of going to look for somebody else to do it, we decided to take on the challenge ourselves. It was a huge undertaking. There are 30 performers on stage, including a live 7-piece show band. And at the time, we're in the play, but at the time we also directed it. So when I say it was a labour of love, it certainly was that.
With 30 performers, you know, the most profitable show is a one-man show, you know.
Yes, we know. Our next show is going to be a two-woman play. two women and one man. We couldn't leave Paul
behind. So Paul, how did you get involved in this production before we go back to your earlier career?
Yeah, it was a lovely introduction, actually. A strange woman rang me one morning when I was in my last year of work one Friday morning, and she said, now, Paul, Paul, you don't know me, but my name is Carol O'Brien, and I'm doing this show. And she told me that story. And I said, well, what part would you like me to play? And she said, well, he's a belligerent, unlikable, dislikable, disgruntled, curmudgeonous person. And then she said, with an incomplete sense of himself. I said, when would you like me to start? I said, you had me at belligerent. So, yeah.
But I mean, how did she know about you besides...
I had seen Paul in a production of Sweeney Todd with his son, actually, years ago. Helen and I both had. And we just put his name in the memory bank as a really talented actor and somebody to call upon if a part ever came up that required somebody of his description, yeah, essentially.
So
we're very
lucky.
I
ended up on that, yeah. So, again, a cranky part. Not a very pleasant individual, George Turpin. Yeah.
We cannot talk to, as I say, Mescal pair without mentioning Mescal Feast.
Go for it.
because he licked it up off you, I presume. Or
well,
did he?
Well, funnily enough, Paul was very interested in sport all through his formative teenage years. And then just one fine day, he said, I'm really interested in theatre and drama and stuff like that. So he would have seen me on and off interacting with theatre and stage and all of that sort of stuff. So he would have seen it as a normal thing. And then when he decided to, because he was quite driven, whatever he would go for, he would be very driven at it.
And do you remember when you identified that he had caught the bug, rather than just saying, this is what dad does?
Yeah, I do, actually. I remember, it was at about the time of Sweeney, or no, I had been in a show, and the stage manager was doing a show that Paul had been cast in school. And I was wondering, because I hadn't heard him rehearse at home, I hadn't heard anything like that going on. And I said to the stage manager, I said, how's Paul doing? He said, you have no need to worry about it, she said. So if the stage manager, they know their onions. He was in The Phantom in a school production. And yeah, so I knew then that there was something there.
Yeah, now it's one thing to do like you did, which is to involve yourself in amateur dramatics.
Yeah.
It's another thing to become professional. But let's go back to you, because you also had it in the family.
Yeah, my father I would have seen my father. I grew up in West Clare, and, you know, West Clare is a bastion of traditional Irish music and sport and ga and stuff like that. Whereas my father wasn't a great ga man, but he was interested in theatre, and he was interested in all of that. So I saw that as a normal kind of a thing.
Yeah. You're saying in rural Ireland, when, you know, back in that time, I'm not sure that it's that much different now, but you could be interested in music, you could be interested in sport, the guy, the hurling or football or whatever, or you might be a member of the local drama group.
Well, you know, in lots of, nearly every parish in the country has the GAA club, and it has a drama society or a performance endeavour of some kind, you know. So that was.
So your father was involved?
My father was, yeah, he was. He was directing Sive in the local hall back in, I think it was 1978, 79. And I looked at this, I wanted to be on the stage, you know. And we didn't have drama schools, you know, to go to in West Clare. If I had been in Dublin, you would have had a lot more outlets and opportunities to learn to become an actor. So anyway, I said to him, Dad, come here. I said, the tinker's son in Sive is Cartelon. I'm the son. I'm 12. I can be in this, surely. I didn't realise, of course, that the tinker's son could have been anything up to 50. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I was in it, and I went on stage, and I never looked back. I never got off.
And you're an award-winning amateur performer, are you?
Yeah, I was very blessed. Again, like in the GAA, you have the All-Ireland in drama as well, which is happening very soon in Athlone now. It goes, all of the best societies and clubs in the country will go to Athlone. They'll slug it out for best play, best actor. I won best actor in 2000. So that was my...
And your father...
The height of my fame.
Your father had done it too.
Yes, he won it in 57.
My goodness. So then when your son finally decides, I want to be an actor... you're a school teacher, so the logical thing is to say, son, you've got to have a plan B. You've got to have, quote unquote, something to fall back on.
If you have plan B, I never asked him that question, because if you say, what's plan B, you've already identified that plan A has failed.
Yeah.
So you never said that to him?
No, I didn't, because I knew he was driven, and I felt confident that he was fortunate to be selected into the Lear, which is a premier place of training for actors. So he had that. I knew he had enough drive, and I wasn't concerned. And then, you know, there is luck, but you make a lot of your own luck as well.
You do, but it's a precarious profession.
It is. The highs are high and the lows are low.
Yeah, and I mean, you can have your star glitter for a while and then fade.
Yeah, well, that's
not happening to Bull, and it won't happen to Bull at this point.
This is a wooden desk, yeah.
Yeah, it is. There's wood there. Yeah, now, when you finally got to see him, I mean, I was looking at his credits, and they're enormous. I mean, theatrical credits, television credits, and movie credits, and obviously Hamlet being the most recent thing that we've seen. And we know he's doing the Beatles at the moment as well, which is phenomenal. That's going to take a long time, I reckon.
It's halfway through production, I think, at the moment.
Halfway through. But when you saw him first on the, be it small screen or big screen, I mean, what was your feeling? Were you kind of criticizing, as I suspect you would want to, Annie, analyze and criticize, and I don't mean that in a negative way, but assessing the performance?
No, you would never. You would. You might see something, and you might discuss it with him, you know. But generally speaking, I suppose my first reactions when I would have seen, like any father when they would see their son or daughter doing something that they're proud of. I'm a bit of a mess, so I'm a bit tingly, and the hairs stood up on my neck and all of that. It's just, you know, you just get emotional about it. And
now, I haven't mentioned your wife.
Yes.
Because she obviously has a little bit of the theatrical gene as well.
No, she's poetic. She emerged as a writer there very, very recently, but she has always had a poetic streak in her. She has a poetic soul.
Yeah. And I was thinking of how you met.
How we met? Yes, that's we met in the stage, yes. in Greystone's Operatic and Dramatic Society, and I was playing the Pirate King, and she was playing one of the lovely ladies, and we met.
She was in a bit part, and you were the star.
And
then you got married, and the roles reversed to me.
Yes, absolutely. she's a published author now, and I'm still doing my stuff.
So you do remember the show band era?
I actually do. Sadly, I'm a little bit older than Carl.
Well,
I remember being in the parish I'm from in West Clare called Curraclare. And, you know, back in the early 80s, you know, the transport wasn't, you know, if you were going out in the middle of the country, you know, there wasn't many places to go. So the show band, the Conquerors, was what the first band I saw. And they came to the parish hall. And the parish hall, which I thought was very big at the time, was actually a relatively small hall. And it was jointed. It was jointed and pulsating and, you know, big sound in the hall. We wouldn't have seen that or heard that before, you know. So I was really blown away by it. So I would have seen two or three show bands, and then they kind of faded very quickly then into the mid-80s, went to college, and that was that.
Yeah, now, when you went to college, was there the kind of an urban-rural divide in the sense that the quote-unquote, the cultures loved the show bands and the urbanites loved the beat, you know?
I went to college in Limerick, and to be honest, I don't really recall. Like, you know, there was plenty of discos were in at the time then, and it was college life, so it was a different world. So I didn't really engage with the show bands after that, you know.
Now, the show, anyway, it's coming to the Gaiety, but it has a life. It has been seen before.
Oh, it has, yeah. So it premiered in Nace in 2018 for a sold-out run. Then it went to Carlow. We went on a bit of a tour with it and the Civic. Then we were interrupted, unfortunately, for 2 years by COVID, as was everybody else in this industry and others. But then we managed to rejuvenate it after that with pretty much the exact same cast, which was fantastic. There is such passion amongst our cast and our creative team for this production. And then went to the Olympia, the Three Olympia, in 2024 for a sold-out run. And we're back due to popular demand and basically just due to the incredible feedback that we've received. Like, so many people from that era, say, who would come to see the show, have told us that they just felt transported back to those days for a couple of hours when they came to see the show. And, you know, as writers, I suppose that's the highest praise that we could have asked for. We have loads of kind of references from our research throughout the show, like the Côté Lemon perfume the girls used to wear, the Morris Minor car that they go in. The priest goes around the dance hall scene with his stick, making sure couples aren't too close together. Can you imagine if a priest went into Coppers nowadays, what the reaction would be with the stick separating?
They do, but they don't wear the gear.
Keep me to it, Pat.
Anyway, I suppose Paul has seen you in action in the show or not?
No, he didn't make it to the last run. My daughter came, actually. Yeah. She's a singer-songwriter. And I said to her, Nell, you have to. I went to see you in the Olympia in April. You have to come and see me in September. So she did come and see me. So Paul hasn't come to see it because he was shooting the last time.
But he'll have to be in Mufti.
We'll never say never.
Anyway, booking, or are you sold out already?
So, no, not quite yet. There are some performances. But no, on Ticketmaster, gaiety.ie, tickets available, or on the Gaiety Theatre website also.
Are you dancing?
The 9th to the 13th of June, sorry, the date. So it is coming in very quickly, yeah.
Paul Mescaltinier and Carol Gleeson, star and co-creator of the show, thank you very much for joining us in the studio.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Pat.
The Pat Kenny Show, Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.